go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, good day! Welcome, 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 one and all, to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am your host for the next couple of days, John Fox, down in the beautiful central coast of Australia. Sorry about the slow and delayed start there, folks, but couldn't get on the bloody streamer for a moment, but we sorted it out. Sorry about the unfortunate delay in beginning the proceedings. Well, Bob's in D.C. Hopefully we might hear from him before the program is finished. Because, you know, whatever was going on during the day was happening while I was asleep. Because for those of you that don't realize, and in case you just missed it a minute ago, I'm in Australia. It's been a while since I've been on air, folks. And a lot has gone down. I'll tell you. It's one of them times where I'm just going, yeah. And someone says, boy, you look pissed off at the world. Maybe that's because I am. We're going to get into a lot of that. Okay, here's the deal. For those of you that followed my program when it got on air, whenever it did get on air there for the last few months, we have the real phones, so it's all the real deal today. None of this Skype nonsense. You dial in just like we normally do. The 800 number, everything is as normal. And email will roll into, if you want to drop me an email, John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com. And, light up the phone lines. Not quite yet. Give Agnes a break. Agnes is going to be screening calls today. I mean, this is like, wow, a real operation today. Feels like a bit of a flashback, eh? Agnes and I were teching all this out yesterday, which is really what makes what happened just a little while ago all the more frustrating. Because it was all just a thing of beauty. But, hey. We're there, but, you know, many, 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 many moons ago, when we first got this network happening, Agnes used to produce my show every morning. Didn't we do that, like, every morning at one point? Or it was my morning, or was it your morning? I don't even remember. I get so backwards up here. But anyway, we got a lot to cover. Obviously, there's two subjects going on right now. And I think you can guess what those are. One, obviously, the destruction and just hell that's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. And I've been kind of chomping at the bit to be on air to bitch about this. You know those known unknowns? Yeah. All you environmentalists, you're always sitting there talking about worst case scenario. Hey, guess what? Here, I got your worst case scenario right here. See, it's happening right in front of you. And that piece of shit CEO of BP. God forbid one of those little fucking curls gets out of place. I want my life back. You know, freaks me out. Freaks me out big time. And obviously, the other story is Israel's midnight raid in international waters of an aid flotilla. I'm telling you, it's really hitting the point of danger when a country believes their own bullshit. And that really is where we are. And I'm going to get there, and I know I'm going to be going for the mighty third rail. But this is really getting out of hand. This is really getting out of hand. And I am going to play you a song a little later that if it does not make your blood boil, there is something severely wrong with the way your brain is wired. But we'll get there too. But first, I thought I'd start things on a slightly lighter note. I sent this to Bob last week, and unfortunately, he did not get the opportunity to play it. And for regular listeners of Bob's program, I think it was about this time last week, Bob played an old segment from two guys by the name of Clark and Daw down here in Australia. About, you know, the front of the ship falling off thing. Okay. I have Clark and Daw from just last Thursday night. Now, Clark and Daw have been going for yonks. I mean, they've been going as long as I've lived in this country on the 7:30 report. Once a week, they make an appearance and kind of do their shtick. And their shtick is two guys. One guy always plays the interviewer, and the other guy plays whoever, whether it's a politician, a company CEO, a sports person, whatever. And they did BP, the oil disaster, and a young president. And as usual, these guys nail it. So for your listening pleasure, I give you, from last Thursday, Australia's Clark and Daw interviewing the BP CEO.
And John Clark and Brian Daw now on oil spills and a struggling president.
Thanks for your time.
Good to be talking to you. Good evening.
Now, this oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, can you tell us what happened?
Yes, we're talking about an offshore oil rig, which is, of course, a large device for pumping oil out of an oil field under the sea floor.
Sure. And what happens if something goes wrong?
Well, we're trying to figure that out at the moment.
No, I mean, before you start, what are the regulations
for dealing with that problem? No, you're not going to have a problem. You're not going to have a problem before you start.
Yeah, but what are the regulations?
The what?
Regulations.
Can you Google something for me quickly? Relegations?
No, regulations.
Regulations? Well, Google them both.
This is before you start.
Now, you're not going to have an accident before you start. I mean, it's starting that causes the problem. There is no problem before you start. It's beautiful before you start.
So you're saying is that the accidents only happen when you get going?
That's the rule.
So what happened?
Well, in this case, there was a large explosion. The rig caught fire. 20 million gallons of crude oil spilled into the sea, and then the rig sank. I mean, everything happened.
So what did you do?
Well, first things first, obviously. The first thing to do in an event like that is to underestimate the problem.
What? Underestimate the problem?
Yes, because we don't want people to panic. I mean, you've got to calm people down. A lot of people get very worried.
Why do they get worried?
Well, because the sea is filling with oil. A lot of people are very sentimental about the sea.
But understating the problem, surely not a solution.
Well, no, not to that problem, but first things first.
So what was solution number two?
Solution number two was to acknowledge the magnitude of the problem, but to point out that it's certainly not BP's fault. This is not our fault.
Whose fault is it?
I don't know, someone else, a bloke who built the wing nuts or something.
The solution doesn't sound very good.
That wasn't one of our better ones, but the next one was brilliant. We dropped a kind of shopping centre over the hole.
An underwater shopping centre?
Underwater shopping centre. We fitted it over the hole.
And did that work?
No, but it was a brilliant idea.
In what sense was it brilliant?
Well, we know that doesn't work. We won't be trying that again.
What was the fourth solution?
Fourth solution is to offer to help with the clean-up. We can help there.
Hang on a second. How do you mean help? Shouldn't you be doing the clean-up? I mean, well, you're the one getting the oil out of the ocean.
We're not getting the oil out of the ocean. That's useless, that oil. How do you get oil out of the sea? We've been trying for a week. You can't be done. It's useless.
Okay, so what about the fifth solution?
Fifth solution was to pump mud down into the hole.
What with?
Well spotted. You see, that's the problem there. Ultimately, of course, relief wells is the thing we're going to have to build. And when relief wells. Drill relief wells.
And when can you do that?
August.
Anything in the meantime?
Well, we've gone with a democratic solution in the meantime, which is nice.
What's a democratic solution?
Well, blame the president.
For causing the largest oil spill in US history.
Bad mistake. People hate it.
But
people absolutely hate it.
But he didn't do it.
Well, he didn't prevent it, did he? I mean, have a look out there.
Thanks for your time.
He didn't prevent it, pardon?
Thanks for your time.
Regulations. No, it won't be measured in barrels. I think it's a different concept altogether. I've never heard of it either, but keep bloody looking.
Would you Google regulations? These guys never miss. Ever, ever, ever miss. And nothing is sacred, as it should be. But, it puts the whole thing into such context, actually. Because I've been screaming since this all began. And unfortunately, I haven't been on air, so none of you have heard it. Just, you know, my neighbors. And they're going, what's wrong with that guy next door? But, you know, watching the whole song and dance. You know, this accident has been decades in the making. This isn't something that happened under the Obama administration. I mean, it did. It's taken place. But, you know, you gotta go back. And go back a little further. And I mean, y'all know this. You go back a little further and we get back to the last administration where, you know, energy policy was all done behind closed doors and written by the energy companies themselves and... Oh, yeah, we'll just self-regulate. That whole thing, I've never bought that whole self-regulation idea. You know? It's like someone going into drug treatment and having no one test to see if they're staying clean. You know, rationing out their stash as you get them off it. Because, I mean, that's really what this comes down to is this addiction. And an addiction is defined as something you cannot live without. Okay? Now, you know, I'm addicted to things. But most of them don't sell the lives of workers down the shitter. I mean, we're talking about 11 people have died on this platform. And this really does shit me to tears. The fact that we haven't really heard even public outrage. You know, it's like, oh, 11 guys died in the name of oil. Thanks for the flesh. But, you know, And you go back before Bush Cheney. And for years now, almost the entirety of my life on this planet, probably even the entirety of it, we have gone on this concept that you can't regulate anything. Business should just be, the free market means that it should be unfettered, and whoever dies, dies, and whoever wins is good. And I sit here, and I'm telling you, I have been so glued into the coverage what's going on in the Gulf, because, you know, again, the hippies were right, okay? I'm tired of hearing people coming up to me and going, you're just a fucking hippie. It's like, you know what? Yeah, I am. And you know what? Me and all the ones that came before me, we've been right every single freaking time. And I'm tired of people, and this, I tell you, I've so had it. When it comes to having this discussion, where people just completely will disregard the reality of the costs of this addiction that we've got. It's disgusting. And here we are, the American nation, being the big, you know, guy on the street. I got a bit of audio I'm going to play later where the oil trade is portrayed as a gang war. I don't know. I sent this to Bob last week as well. I'm not sure if he got to this one either, but if he did... It's worth playing again. We're going to go to it. But, I mean, there's so much history here, right? And BP! BP! Holy crap! You know, we've gone years. I mean, even me, you know, ever since the Valdez, you know, Exxon was the worst oil company in the world. Holy crap! Since this thing happened in the Gulf, and the documents start coming out, and we start seeing that, like... BP, like, by, it was like 100, I might not have the numbers right, but it's like 160, 70 violations in the same period that, like, all the other oil companies combined had, like, under 20. Okay, like, Exxon had, like, 2 or 3 or 4. I mean, all of a sudden I'm looking at Exxon going, all right, you're still dirty, wait till they die so you don't have to pay them out in Alaska, cunts. Sorry, I don't mean to use that word in the American stance. I'm sorry, that slips. It's different here. We're a little bit more adult about language here in Australia. We don't get offended so easily. So I apologize to anyone who took that word in the American fashion, because it's not how it was meant. But these... BP, Mossadegh, goes back to there. And we're supposed to believe anything that curly-haired little Tony Blair wannabe poodle. Unbelievable. And like from the Clark and Daw piece there. You know? Oh, well, you know, we're just playing bluff game until we can try and keep as much of the oil that's spilling to sell on the inflated market, which will be inflated because of our own malfeasance? I don't know. And at the same time, we turn around and we're going to blame the Obama administration for the entirety of this. Now, I got my problems with the way he's handled some of this, and it's been more in image than in substance. Because in that long history of deregulation that we've gone through and the massive, massive, massive sucking up of oil companies and paying into the into the political system, we still have people who live in the Gulf of Mexico still sitting there going, yeah, but we gotta drill for that oil. Gotta have that stuff. It's got to be cheap, because I'm an addict. And it doesn't matter what the pusher does to us. We'll keep going back for that fix. What the hell is wrong with the mentality of people in the world? I mean, it's not just the United States. But it blows me away that this is an environmental disaster created by a private corporation, or a few of them. But people will still be conned into the concept that, like, oh, but they can't be destroyed! No! Because, well, then where do I get my heroin from? You know? You feel me? Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. But here we are. Here we are. But I do think, now here's, I've gone on my whole I'm pissed off rant. But there's the other part of me, and I do think this is going to be the case because I think reality is coming screaming down the pipe at everyone. The pictures of these birds and whatnot just coated in oil, suffocating, dying. And the people who made their lives on the water, I think it's incredible that we can put at risk this huge, wonderful economy that revolves around not only transport, entertainment, tourism, And the fishing! I mean the blackened catfish. The prawns. The day-to-day business. It's all gone. But yet, if you were to bring up the idea of a corporate death penalty, which I think is where we should be going, a corporate death penalty. You go, you're put into mandatory receivership, you're kept in business long enough to pay for the damages that you've created. The people in charge go to prison. When it's all said and done, a company like BP is no longer. It will be a footnote. So, and like I see similar things. See, it's not just Americans that have these delusions of sucking up to their corporate masters. We got a similar thing going on here in Australia right now with a resources profits tax, right? And I always find it interesting how we have such parallels between the two countries. And I'm watching the Australian public buy into the advertising from the world's biggest miners. That after their ungodly profits and killing jobs during the great financial downturn thing, that they are responsible for holding the entire Australian economy together, and that unless they make those squillions of profits, they're going to take stuff elsewhere. And just like we've talked about in West Virginia, yeah, it's like, go ahead! Go overseas! You won't be able to mine our coal, our minerals, because it's still here. Nice bluff, but try again. But it appears that the people here are buying this. And I sit there and I shake my head and wonder, holy crap. Y'all just don't get it, do ya? Oh, there we go. A good opening 20 minutes of just kind of getting it off my chest. Feels good. Been a long time. So, all right. What are we doing next? I tell you, I'm going to continue on here with this idea of the addiction. Okay. Swing over here to this page. Okay. If you've never seen it or heard it or watched it, I recommend, and it's on Google Video in its entirety, Robert Newman's History of Oil. Now, it's a couple of years old, but it is one of the most interesting bits of comedy theater I've ever seen. And just to give you a hint, the broadcast is powered by, well, I mean the recording and the actual stage show part is actually powered by two people on stationary bicycles pedaling for the power, for the lights, for the TV screens on the stage. I reckon the video and the house audio are probably on standard power, but, you know, trying to make a point. And so at one point when he says, "Can we dim the lights, please?" they all start to pedal slower. It's great. But anyway, here's a segment from this video. Robert Newman starts going way back with BP and Mossadegh, right? Straight up through to the Second Gulf War. And the piece you're about to hear kind of takes place, you know, after we got Saddam in this last one a few years back. So, for your listening pleasure. And again, you know, I believe comedy is one of the great vehicles for getting information out there because it sticks. It connects to the brain from so many different pathways than just as a static bit of information that it becomes easier to recall. And, I mean, that was part of the original concept behind Air America. Boy, did they lose the plot. And hey, they're gone now, notice. But anyway, from Robert Newman's History of Oil.
You have to imagine the world's the Bronx housing project. and the US is the number one crack dealing mafia don on the block. Anybody wants to buy rack in this neighborhood, you better come to me. Otherwise, you're going to end up like that fucking guy over there. Take a good look, everybody. And it's right after Operation Desert Fox. Everyone's watching as Iraq comes limping back to his first day at work at the petrol station. And he lifts the drop lock shutters and he gets to the PA system in the forecourt and says, okay, everybody, come to me. I sell rock and crack to everybody. And leaning out the Andes tower blocks, third floor balcony, Venezuela, Bolivia and Peru are looking down, and Venezuela calls down to America.
Ah, compañero, I thought you said you had this neighborhood under control.
Hey, don't make me come up there and deal with you.
You tried that last week, my friend. You could not get up these stairs. Maybe I come down there, do you?
You do that. Right now, I got business to take care of. And he always gets his boys, gets the boys on a baseball bats. And they go up to Iraq and they get him by the hair. And they drag him into the arc light in the petrol station forecourt.
Okay, everybody, take a good look at this guy. Iran, Syria, you watching? Brazil. Maybe you're thinking about not implementing the IMF austerity package. Take a good look at this guy. See what happens next.
Damn, and he bloody believe rock, trample him into the dirt, cut off his ears, and when the dust settles, the United States is leaning on his bloody bespattered, splintered baseball bat, getting his breath back. And Venezuela, meanwhile, has come down to the petrol station forecourt and is walking around America.
That fight took it out of you, compañero. 10 years ago, you take this guy, you don't even break sweat. This time, I gotta tell you, I don't think you could have taken him out of here. If it was not for the help of your little friend.
You mean this bitch? Well, you know, when he says bitch, what he really means, of course. Shut up! I got this neighborhood out of control! At which point, a high end driver in my North Korea speed fast is to America!
You were saying, compañero, about control? I could not hear because someone was shouting death to America very loudly in my ear. Would you care to repeat for me?
You want a piece of me?
Anytime you like.
Okay, let's go. Let's grab the pipe and hear this noise. Hey, look up. Here comes China.
Is there a problem?
No, no problem, officer. No problem. We owe you $149 billion. Keep buying those dollars to buy all. No problem. I'll let the local get everything taken care of. Everything under control.
I just felt I couldn't get all that across on one answer on question time.
So, that really is how it feels. Because now that the neighbors on the block that have been selling the stuff and have been dealing with all the crime and the damage and everything, with the dealing, which is oil. The manipulation begins. And the manipulation started from day one with what happened in the Gulf. From the beginning, BP was underestimating or trying to avoid making estimations on how much oil was coming out of the ground. Because as soon as they make an estimate, it sets them up for what it's going to cost them for the damages. So it's just deny, 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 deny. Talk it down, talk it down, talk it down. And I mean, that BP son of a bitch to sit there, and, you know, a few days ago. I mean, really, did he think he was going to get away with it when he said, what plumes? I mean, really? Seriously, man? Sorry, man. You went to an English school. You have to be smarter than that. Or are you that much of a corporate bitch? Obviously you are. That you can stand there and see with your own eyes and smell it, from what I understand, the smell between the oil and the dispersants is just atrocious. I mean, this is where we need, you know, like smell-o-vision from the Kentucky Fried movie. Remember that film? Funny movie. But this guy can stand there knowing full well that the oil's on the way. And even though it wasn't right where he's standing, and this is like way out at sea, you know, to actually stand there and go, what plumes? Folks in the chat room are talking about Helen Thomas. We're going to get there as well today. And I'll tell you what, I reckon we should start getting the phone lines fired up. So if you want to get in on the conversation, 877-4-HEAD-ON, it's 877-443-2366. Or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. You know, light them up. I want to hear what you've got to say on this. And then, you know, we'll get in, and I reckon y'all have it on your minds too, you know, whether it's the Israel flotilla weirdness. Boy, what a strange word to use to describe that. And you know, this whole BP thing. You know, and Obama's reaction. I mean, I haven't even gotten to the fact that I think it's this bizarre mix of people being rightly sorry, I'm trying to multitask. This is the fun part of producing your own show, you know. It's like trying to keep a line of conversation going while you're going to go pick a song for a break. Oh, man, you know, I really just sometimes that whole kind of tongue-in-cheek line that I've been using for years, how, you know, people live in opposite world. And, you know, it's becoming so true. I mean, the Israeli flotilla thing is a great example. I mean, the PR bloody wash up that Israel has tried to do over this is a joke. And I really think that they're in danger of having the entire world turn against them because they're believing their own bullshit. And I know that going down this road is going to be tough for some people, and I don't mean to offend anyone, but as you know, we're talking about the actions of a nation. And if any other country went and boarded a boat in international waters, there would be hell to pay. But yet again, the double standard that is everyone's relationship with Israel, no matter how much they show that they are inhumane and deny reality, actually denying the fact that there's any humanitarian crisis going on in Gaza, I don't give a shit which side of this thing you stand on. If you can't look at what's going on over there and see humanitarian crisis when 4 out of 5 people depend on on international aid, and they're not even allowed to export goods, come on. Again, this opposite world thing has got to bloody stop. And this inability to look around when you, your own horse in the fight. To see something different. And don't even get me onto the concept that people feel that they have a religious right to a piece of land. Because this atheist doesn't even tolerate using voodoo and bogus texts as something to base national or foreign policy on. Because I'm really tired of people giving up their logical thinking brain. And that's a really scary thing that I see more and more and more. People not even wanting to think. Just knee-jerk reactions. Anyway, we're going to take a break. Light up the phone lines, please. Be good to talk to some people. Finally get to do this show with phones. It's been a long time. Anyway, let's see. This, I think, is a good one. This one's for Benjamin Netanyahu, or Nutan Juju. He's crazy! He's like, he's a nutcase. This wasn't a love boat, this was a hate boat. And we're going to get to his little crazy, this video, this song. If you haven't heard about this, I mean, the wash that they're trying to make of this thing. I find it disgusting, and I know they're going to be mad people at me, but I just can't help it. But this one's for you, Ninny, or whatever your frickin' nickname is. Faith No More, The Gentle Art of Making Enemies. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid. This is John Fox filling in. Light up the phones! We'll be back.
And alcohol. Everybody loves it, and so do I. And President George W. Bush will party tonight. Damn the consequences. Another shot. The sky's the limit. We resolve to party all the way to God.
I,
everybody dance. Oh, hey, where did that go? And I was just enjoying that. Oh, I have to, where'd that go? Anyway, welcome back, folks. Welcome to, back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. John Fox fill in the chair or the driver's seat for the next couple of days while Bob's in D.C. And I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to do as we do here on the Kincaid Show. We're going to go straight to the phones. And I believe we've got David on the line. How you going, David?
John, I'm also in the chat room. My personal view on this is that most of America listens so much to right-wing talk that it's hard to get an objective perspective. I think for every hour that a person gets to listen to you, John, or to Bob, they are subjected to hundreds of hours of this Limbaugh and Hannity craziness. Those groups are owned completely by the big, greedy corporate special interests, and that's what's causing our mind shafts to cave in.
Yeah.
And that's what's causing.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes, like, but you know, you say right wing, and I agree with you, but as time goes on, and like, you know, the fact that we're in a supposedly democratic administration at the moment, I find so much more of it is so internationally corporate driven, and that's not to be like all Alex Jonesy and whatnot, but it really is coming down to like this thing with BP, where it's an international corporation that seems to just kind of like run all governments around the block and not be responsible for anything. And it's the corporates that are feeding most of the corporatized media. It just feels so, you know, Fox is way right wing, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it seems to be that this corporatism thing has kind of like, you know, found its way into all sides or both sides of our two-sided system. Dave?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. I think it's, to me, I'm hearing it everywhere I go. It's hard for me to see any longer an objectivity. So I got gapped out a little bit on what you were trying to tell me, but.
Oh, well, I just some, that aside from it being right wing, but it just feels so much like it's corporate driven. You know, like in regards
to
the...
Yes, and you see a difference there, do you? You see that the big corporate special interest and owning and controlling right-wing talk, there's something different about those two? I don't find it.
Well, yes,
the same big...
Bit of a same of a sameness, but, you know, I mean, again, though, we have even people on the left that do that are kind of... You know, oh, you know, we can't regulate too much, or, you know, oh, we need those platforms for jobs, when the damage that's been done negates financially any of the job benefits to communities and the public. And so, you know, that's why I say it just feels, you know, yeah, it's right wing, you know, and politically it's very right, but it's the corporateness of it. It's the corporateness of it.
I think it is those same people that say, grab as much as you can, stuff it in your own pockets, don't put out any money protecting your workers or those who may be harmed. We want the big bucks, and if something goes wrong, well, then that's tough. But we want it to make as much as we can. And spending money to protect the workers or spending money to protect the people, the working people, that's not what they're about, not even a little bit. That's my observation.
I wish
it were different.
I think it's a reality. You know, we just have to look what's happened. You know, in coal mining, which we all know so well. You know, with us all knowing Bob and Agnes the way that we do. That it has nothing to do with the workers. That's why I kind of said in my opening rant that, you know, as far as BP is concerned, those 11 dead platform workers, you know, thanks for the flesh.
Yeah.
And that's
not what troubles them. It is that, is this going to be less money in our pockets right now? That'll trouble them. And is there some way that they can be made accountable for the part that they've had to play in all this harm? That'll trouble.
A corporate death penalty.
A corporate death penalty.
I don't think that that's a radical idea. I really don't.
It'll call for a Harry Truman. And do we have one? Do we have somebody that will take the courageous stand and say, I hold you accountable for this? Teddy Roosevelt. Somebody that will stand up to them. See, I think there's a fear now that the corporate special interests control more successfully, more vehemently than we might, common knowledge might tell us. But I think that if, for example, a JFK said, I'm ordering our troops out of Vietnam, I don't see that as a legitimate interest of this country. What might happen to a JFK? I ask that question. I throw it out. Well, I think that there are those in the background who control with a ruthless power. And I suspect that Barack Obama is very much aware of that.
I wouldn't doubt that at all. And I sometimes, you know, David, your concept of what is left and what is right is probably fairly close to mine, I would guess. But in the American paradigm, if you're, you know, to the left of, you know, Mussolini, you're centrist. And anything further left than that is the wacko left as far as the national perception, or at least how it's portrayed. Because language, you know, the Bill O'Reillys and whatnot, you know, they're able to attach these modifiers onto liberal, onto left. And for some, and unlike, you know, here in Australia, yeah, our supposed Labor Party is a lot righter than we'd like, but there still is people understand what center actually is. That center isn't center right. Center's center.
You know, I think this really does call for some clarification. I think that we need to really try to get down and explain. I think there are certainly a couple of generalized groups of people. There are those people who care about the plight of poor people. There are those people who are troubled when they see people living under bridges and hungry and ill-clothed. There are people that care about that and would like to see the government do something to improve their plight. Clearly, these are not right-wingers. They are the Democrats, the liberals, the progressives that would think that way. I care about troubled people who are hurting. But there is another faction of people that see others out there as only there to be used to benefit themselves. How do I get more from them? They don't have enough, but I want to get more. I want. My greed is that. And they see other people only to be exploited. And I see them as being the right, the Republican. Maybe others would have a different view, but I think that's a generalization that I've kind of come to. I don't know. Do you share it? Or?
Well, I definitely share it with what has become the what we would call the modern Republican. You know, you go back, you know, a ways. And, you know, I think Bill Maher, you know, used to say it best. You know, the Republicans used to be the grumpy old men that looked after my money. And now they become the, you know, something completely other than that, that are trying to take it from me and keep it all for themselves. And, you know, I do believe that, you know, we had, during the 80s, I remember, man, I was a teenager, and it was just, you know, greed, 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 greed is good, more, 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 consume, 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 consume. And my generation, which, you know, is kind of coming up into their political adulthood, is a generation that grew up being fed this idea that the more we consume and devour and the more that you collect, the better a person you are. And they were able to connect it with Christianity somehow, which just completely blows my mind. You know, that whole camel eye of a needle kind of thing. And my generation, because I used to be, you know, I grew up in a right-wing household. I drunk the whole Reagan Kool-Aid. And it wasn't until I actually got out of the country and started to see the rest of the world for what it is that my entire foundation was shaken to its core. And I had to completely relearn what I thought I knew. And I think that that's one of the big problems, is that what has been done to education. People actually don't have the tools to deal with this stuff. I really, really think the United States is suffering the idiocracy problem, because I really do feel that it's becoming a country of morons. It's sad, but honestly,
I think that we travel a lot in our automobiles, and we have a radio in there, and we push buttons. We listen. Sean Hannity, and he lies to us. To Rush Limbaugh, he lies to us. Armstrong Williams, he lies to us. We get one after another, Mark Levin. They're all there because there's money being put in their pockets to deceive us. I think of these guys as closers in a car lot that are there to try to sell you a product that's defective and overcharge you for it, make you feel guilty you didn't pay more. That's what those guys are all about.
Yeah. I remember, you know, the idea of how dare you ask for how dare you ask for an increase in pay so you can actually live in some small way like a modern human being? Because, well, if you want another dollar or two an hour, that's taking away from the boss. And, you know, we're all here to work for the boss. And when all the security and longevity of the 1950s, if that actually was a reality, was gone, I don't understand why people still have this just willfully ignorant dedication to the people that are keeping them in servitude.
You know, when you think back to the early 20th century, probably one of the most significant of people would have been Henry Ford. He was employing thousands of people to make his little Model T. He wanted it to be able to be sold, but that meant people needed to make a few hundred bucks to be able to buy one. The markup was very low. I think he only made a few dollars on each of them, but he had to pay his employees a decent wage so that they could save up a little money and buy themselves a Model T, and it worked.
Ford, for all the things that I might be able to say negative about him, he understood that his own workers had to be able to afford to buy his products.
And others who would be competing for jobs would have to be making something comparable, or everybody would want to work for Ford. So I guess a lot of other employees, Carnegie Steel had to pay a comparable salary, or he would lose all of his employees.
Right. So, how times have changed, and how, you know, what's happened to unions in my lifetime. And, you know, I mean, I grew up at the beginning of the all unions are corrupt and bad, right? And that's all I ever heard until I became old enough to work and until I actually joined my first union. And
you look back and you know there was a significant period in your lifetime when you were lied to. When did you become aware of that?
It didn't really totally sink in. The switch didn't totally flip until probably about 12 years ago. But
so you lived through Reagan.
Oh, yeah, man. I am a product of the Reagan Revolution. It was during my time in high school that I saw that the bean counters came into school districts, and they started cutting all the arts and music programs out of schools because they were thought to be frivolous. And the moment that they did that, we watched American reading comprehension and science scores and the SATs and math scores plummet. Because there's a direct correlation between just 1 year's music study and the ability to do calculations and spatial relationships. And we were taught to not care about anything but ourselves. That was...
Somehow you woke up, and that's something that we all need to do. We all need to be able to wake up and see that this, your greed thing that's driving us is not going to get... I mean, it's going to devastate the whole planet, for sure, in the end. They who take so much leave nothing behind. It will do so much harm.
And you know...
That's great.
I think back, David, you know, back to when I was in high school, right? And I had a really, really, really horrible time in school for a few reasons. But a lot of it had to do with fear campaigns and whatnot going on during the Reagan Revolution. And where, you know, if you were other than what was, you know, we're rock stars, you know, against drugs kind of thing, you became a target. And even as I was saying things, or actually regurgitating things that were told to me, you know, regarding the environment, business, labor practices, things like that, even though I was saying things I didn't believe, part of my brain's going, I know everybody else believes this, but this just doesn't seem right. And it was once I got out of the bubble of that's all you hear and actually get to have a discussion where people talk about other things or go in different directions, different options. You know, like the whole idea when I got to Germany of you know, a central healthcare system blew me away. I couldn't get my head around it. But then I started to figure it out. And it's kind of not until you see the forest from the couple of trees around you, I think, is what it comes down to.
John, you got to present yourself, I think, as something of a role model for so many people that haven't been able to see any light at the end of the rainbow. At the time, you know, just buy the product as it's being sold to them. Apparently, many don't even question that. They're angry with those who do question it.
Yeah, and again, it seems so against the idea of what the American nation's supposed to be about. You know, we were told don't rock the boat, but yet the entire nation was founded on the idea of freedom of ideas. And well, you know, we want to go back, you know, the original Tea Party. Boy, they rocked the boat. And that's when change happens. But my generation was taught, don't rock the boat. You will be impacted negatively. It always is about you. Don't worry about if you go along to get along and other people die or get harmed. This is about you. And it took a long time for that to break.
Authority.
Say again?
Don't question authority. You will know.
Yeah.
You will know freedom.
Yep.
Anyway, you've been very generous with your time here, and I trust you've got other people that would like to share their thoughts.
It's really good to have the real phone lines for once, and that we got around whatever that was that kept me from having phones on my own show. So it's been really good to talk to you, David, and do appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon. I'll be on for the next couple of days.
I'll be listening, and I'll try to get back to you. Thank you, John.
All right, man. Take care. All right, folks, we're going to take a little bit of a top-of-the-hour break here thing, and we'll come back and go straight back to the phones. I believe I got David from Maine waiting for me, my good buddy, and I reckon he'll have a few interesting things to say. So we'll go out with what I warmed the stream up with. And this is actually one recommended by David himself, but I'm playing a different version this time. The Neville Brothers, Fire on the Bayou. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid. John Fox here, filling in. We'll see you on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Horn, America's liberal voice.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, everybody, welcome back. A little bit of a... it's probably about... No, not that late, really, when you're considering that we had a late start. But anyway. Welcome back to Head On, folks. Hour number two. The ranting lines are open for your perusal. Let's get on this thing, folks. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go straight back to the phones. And my good friend... David from Maine is on the line. How you going, brother man?
Ming John.
How's life, man? It's been a long time since you and I talked.
Life's been pretty good. I've just been assessing the situation and watching people's reaction. And in particular, I've been watching the Democratic's action regarding this whole oil spill. And the fact that people use this meme now, they say, well, Obama's doing all he can. That's what he's doing. He's doing all he can. But you see, here's the thing, John, and I don't mean to go off on this, but I haven't said really what I feel on this. But my thing is this, is that you have a whole region that is suffering now that is looking for leadership. And when I say leadership, I'm not talking about doing a photo op or standing next to Thad Allen and giving an effing speech. I'm actually talking about, I don't know, you got to take it old school and start having town halls. Go from city to city, town to town, and take the tough questions. And don't stop until that oil spill is plugged up so people know you're serious about it. Otherwise, I'm looking at this and I'm like, I'm sorry, this isn't presidential. Not when you have a disaster like this. And I'll tell you another thing. Anyone that sits in the White House and listens to fucking Hey Jude, they need their head examined. What they should be doing is they should have held a town hall. Should have said, excuse me, Mr. McCartney or Macca, Sir Macca, for a second. I've listened to Hey Jude before. I'll listen to it in Air Force One all the way down. And I'll get back with you. But thanks for coming. And here's Michelle. She'll sit in for a replacement. That's what they should have done, John. But they didn't do that.
I agree. The presentation has been fairly atrocious up until just recently. I do actually believe that when this whole thing first started happening.
Yeah.
Everything at the disposal of the U.S. government as far as hardware and people and whatnot was out there. I mean, the Coast Guard was out there within a couple of hours, right? Very much different. I mean, all I'm saying is compare this. What would this have been like if George W. Bush had been in office? Okay? And,
mm-hmm.
and just, I'm not making apologies for Obama, but there wasn't the hesitation. It was like, yep, get him out there. Now,
right.
We're living with the reality of years of deregulation and the fact that, and I think Rachel Maddow has done a brilliant job on this over weeks, has been showing how the technology to drill deeper has gone forward by leaps and bounds, but the technology to deal with a disaster has not grown at all. And we're still using the same exact techniques that we were using in the 1970s in the last Gulf spill. And like I was ranting at the beginning, you know what? You know, you're just a fucking hippie. Well, you know what? The fucking hippie was right. Here's your worst case scenario. Here's the thing that I never wanted to see happen. And people are, you know, I but Obama, man, he fucking frustrates me on some of this. I mean, I'm glad that he went down there and he's gotten, you know, mad. But I agree with you. I think if we really wanted to deal with this, the idea of a town hall tour, man, that would be the way to do it, to keep the anger level with the people up so that people don't just have it constantly diluted over time how bad this actually is, which is all BP wants. You know, they want to keep people away from it. The less they see, the less real it is, so the less, you know, vengeance people are going to seek.
Well, you know, John, the thing about it is, and if people want to, why I'm quote unquote bashing Obama, I would do this with any president, people. What
right.
I'm saying is when you are the president and when you have a disaster like this that is unprecedented, and I don't care what they say, they keep saying that this is the biggest spill in the United States. Bullshit. This is the biggest spill in the universe.
That's what I've been, and everybody, even the press here has been going in U.S. history, and I'm going like, how about in global history? Let's, you know, because
yeah.
that again is the art of language, trying to in some way minimize and trying to make it that it's like only in one little part of the planet, when actually this thing has the potential to end up right around to the UK. So, I mean, like, if there's any just desserts, if this thing ends up going up the eastern seaboard and back around the northern currents, well, at least maybe it'll land on BP's front door.
You know, John, the other thing that really concerns me is the fact that when you turn on these channels in the media and they start talking about tar balls washing ashore, any kind of thing like that, and they say, well, this wasn't spilled from BP. Give me a break.
What a load of crap.
It just happened to come along at this time. It happened to come along during the same water currents, and they're not. How do you know?
Yeah, and it's like the same thing when.
Did you check their address where they came from?
Yeah.
Did you check their phone numbers? Did tar balls have phone numbers? How do you know?
And it was just like Haywood or whatever his friggin' name is, you know, with that comment going,
yeah.
You know, the cleanup workers. It could have been food poisoning. Yeah, right. Please, you know, they're not sick from the chemicals. They're not sick from the toxins that they're cleaning up. No. It's from a hamburger.
Incidentally, Hayward sounds like Eric Idle a bit.
I've noticed that too, and he's got this, and he looks like the guy who played Tony Blair in a film. And the guy was.
Oh, yes, I know what film you're talking about.
Yeah. I think it was the film The Queen, right? The PM in the
Queen. Yeah, The Queen, right.
Yeah. So, and he was so good, even though he didn't look exactly like Blair, he actually captured what Blair was like. So even when I see him playing something else, I get this first, like, going, ugh, Blair. Oh, no, wait, that's the actor that played it, Blair. And the BP guy just strikes me as that same kind of smarmy, you know. He reminds me of Tony Blair. I saw Tony Blair on the local news talking about, you know, he's supposed to be Mr. Miracle Man in the Middle East, you know. And he's up there tan and blonde and just, like, not even connected to reality. And I think the guy from BP is the same. I cannot... Do you think that the guy's only in the job still because they're just going to leave him up there so one guy takes all the hits for this? And they're not going to dump them until things have kind of passed on.
I think there's a bit of that, but I also think that the situation that BP faces. I mean, let's just imagine it was your accident, John, and you were speeding around in a fast speedboat, and you hit a bump, and somehow you had. Okay, you had a gigantic tanker, maybe not a speedboat, and you hit the side of a building or something, or maybe you hit the side of the coastal line, and just millions of gallons started pouring out of your tanker. What do you think would happen to you?
I think there would be lawsuits and federal and state fines loading up my mailbox within 24 hours.
Let's add one more layer to it. Let's say you're the federal government. What do you think would happen to you? What do you think the reaction would be?
Oh, the people would be in the streets. At least the Tea
yeah.
Partiers would be in the streets. See, government can't do nothing. And I mean the Clark and Daw piece. You know, BP found the greatest escape route for a while. Blame Obama for it. I mean, it's just insane.
Obama's advisors, to me, are politically tone deaf. They don't understand that this is his defining moment of not this year, probably this term. This is his defining moment. He has to do something. And I'm going to tell you something. The fact that he's not having dialogue and the fact that he's just doing the regular photo ops and like my suggestion with the town halls and not taking the tough questions, people are the people that are hurt. for better or for worse, fair or unfair, there is no unfairness when it comes to politics, people. Come on. But fair or unfairness, these people are going to remember that, and they're going to start peeling off one by one. They're already doing that anyways. But what I'm saying is you're going to see a significant number of people just peel away from Obama because he literally can't take the tough questions. He can't take the heat when it comes to that. When he has to face up to a fisherman, or when he has to face up to the tough questions when it comes to regulations, why the regulations are so rolled back. And that's the problem, people. That's the problem. Obama's listening to his advisors, and when you have an unprecedented disaster like this, you can't listen to those advisors.
You have to be listening.
Because they're all for the party. You have to be in this situation.
Yeah.
You know, he made a quote one time. He said, maybe I'll just be a one-term president. Well, you know what, Obama? If you're going to be a one-term president, go out with a bang.
Yeah.
Stand for something, man.
Get something done. And you know, I think Jon Stewart did a beautiful job on him last week, you know, showing him, you know, this basketball thing and that basketball thing. And, you know, I think he just said, get the fuck back to the spill. And interesting, by the end of that week, Obama was back down there making a much more kind of, hard to say angry, but, you know, direct address. But why are we still calling? See, and there's the double message that comes out. You know, one point he's saying the federal government is in control and BP is at the behest of the feds on this cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, later on, well, but we're partners with BP in this. Why are we partnering with BP? What is this partnership?
You know, I think it goes back to the fact of so close to the campaign and the contributions and the lobbyists. It's all so close together that literally the Obama administration is afraid to say anything out of turn to this company rather than just scold them in a theatrical way. But, you know, John, it comes down to this, and this is it's really this simple, John. When something unprecedented happens on this planet, in the Gulf, you have to act in an unprecedented fashion and manner. If you don't, you can't combat it, no matter what you're going to do. I don't care what speech you have. I don't care what photo op you have. It doesn't matter.
I agree. You know, I mean, this guy is being far too controlled, for one. You know, we talk about the campaign and the money, right? This, I think we're getting down to one of the fundamental issues, you know, the whole Citizens United thing, that decision, you know. So now BP is going to be looking to back with unlimited money any politician that will try and minimize the responsibility that they have to take financially or otherwise, and America's democracy is gone as far as that's concerned. You know, Barack Obama and that Congress and that Senate was the last anything resembling a democratic election that that the American people will ever have. That's it. And with this decision, it's now going to be even more of a dog and pony show, but it's going to be nothing but who has more money to plug their bullshit. And
Go ahead. You know what, John? Someone needs to stand up and literally just pound the table and say, if this is going to come out right, if we are going to save face in any way, we have to do it for the people and not for the perception, damn it. And if you don't do it for the people, then don't cry about how much you get slaughtered the next term in the presidential election. Don't cry the next time you realize that your base is dwindling behind you and you're portrayed as a Jimmy Carter or what have you.
Oh, if we'd only listened to that man when I was 7 years old, you know?
Yeah.
I know Bob shares this, and he and I were talking off air one night, and he even was feeling some frustration that, you know, even some of our own listeners will back, you know, the BP angle in ways that they don't even realize that they're doing, you know, and I just, I watch more and more, and like I said, the whole Citizens United thing. This next election is going to be a farce. It's going to be a farce because it's going to be a corporate ad campaign fest. And it's going to end up directing policy. It's going to be ending, you know. So really, Obama needs to, and it doesn't matter who, if it was him or anybody else, at this stage of the game, if someone doesn't make some serious change and revert, get that decision reversed, nothing's ever going to be done, man. The Gulf is dead, and the corporates are going to take over even more. The floodgates have been opened, and this little event, little, I say that, you know, kind of sarcastically, is going to be the big thing that they're going to be spending money on. I mean, look at the money Halliburton's already been throwing at politicians, and we haven't even talked about how the judges that are all involved in hearing the cases, most of them have connects with big oil. How does that happen, man? In a just society, how the hell do we have people with conflicts of interest overseeing the damages cases of people? I just don't get it, man.
It comes down to this, John. The fact that if you go to WhiteHouse.gov and you look at his itinerary schedule, where it's centered around what he'll be doing, his plans for the BP oil spill, it is all highly polished and coordinated, and it looks like shit.
It does.
You actually have to see. This is the problem with the Democrats. You actually have to do something. Go figure. You actually have to do something in the Gulf. You actually have to talk to these people like real people. You can't just go down with a planned speech. Who gives a shit if they didn't vote for you? This is more than that, people. This is way more than that. You have an unprecedented disaster all across this Gulf. And here's the thing about it, John. When people say, it's your coastline, no. It's our coastline, and I'm not talking about the United States. I'm talking about the world.
Yeah.
The world. If the world is with you, if the world is concerned, that should give you a wake-up call. You should put away the scripted speeches and realize now's the time to act like a statesman, or you're going to lose it.
Yeah. I think he's setting himself up for a pretty rough run. I've been here screaming, you know, at the bloody computer and whatnot over the past few weeks. And I just want to see the rage. And, you know, it popped up for a little while and, you know, people that actually deal in fact on this remember it. But, you know, there is this whole connection of Halliburton and whatnot with the same cementing process off the coast of Western Australia just a few months ago that created a very similar situation, just not quite as big. And since it wasn't in as deep of waters, they were able to get the relief wells drilled sooner. But see, even there, we had a problem with that one because it was off of one of the least inhabited places of Australia. So, like, to even get to the beach, you'd need four-wheel drives or a chopper. So, it was really hard to even cover what was going on there. But we finally got a report out that it was Halliburton that was doing the cementing and cut the same corner on the blowout preventer that they cut in the Gulf of Mexico. You had the buildup of methane gas. Boom. Explosion. And when they were asked, when the guy from Halliburton was asked, were you aware that when doing things this way, there was a risk of a buildup of methane? And he just went, no, wasn't aware of that. How the hell? I mean, seriously, man. You know, it's like me being a sound guy and someone sitting there going, did you realize that that a microphone can change physical sound into an electronic signal. No, I wasn't aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
John, one more slick thing about this is the fact that you noticed in the news, and everyone does this, even the left, and this is something that people have to pay attention to. When you say BP, you should be saying, right afterwards, you should say, be saying BP, Transocean, and Halliburton.
Yep.
Because if you don't say those three names, people, you're just assuming the blame for one company, one corporation, and everyone else is off the hook. That's how the media is playing this, but it's important to realize that everyone has their hand in this.
And that's how the bosses of those three companies played it when they were brought up in front of the congressional subcommittee or whatever it was. You know, they all basically, mm-hmm. you know, it was a circular firing squad as they smiled at one another. You know, deferring the blame, deferring the blame, deferring the blame. And this, again, in this unregulated environment, has allowed them to come up with these ways of, you know, the old thing, plausible deniability, right? And I really don't think anyone that understands in any way what is actually going on, you know, can call it anything but playing a game of plausible deniability. And you're absolutely right. We need to be talking BP, Transocean, and Halliburton. And, you know,
yeah.
Halliburton. How many times is this company going to have to kill our soldiers, kill our environment, kill rig workers, defraud the U.S. government time and time again? And I watched Liz Cheney on ABC on Sunday, and she's just god-awful, man. Why that woman gets
any
airtime.
Oh, man, I saw that bit, too.
Oh, that, I mean, and Ariana, I seriously, you know, I thought for a second Ariana was going to lose that, you know, kind of stoic presence of hers. You know, because
if I was Ariana, I would have left the studio, and I would have brought my Hummer and just rolled right over Liz Cheney.
and that was after Liz Cheney actually, surprise, surprise, wasn't making any excuses for BP. But I think she's savvy enough to know that, like, that's not that could work against her in her normal game of just being a propaganda whore, because that's all she is. She's Dick Cheney with long hair, and is out there sowing the seeds of bullshit, and sowing the seeds of lies, and sowing the seeds of just misinformation. I mean, she is a propaganda artist, and the people behind her are propagandists. There's no other way. I mean, that whole thing where she did the Al-Qaeda 7 about the judges actually going after our own attorneys general and our own legal system, it's like, you know, seriously, if there was ever a call to say you're un-American, that's it. You're an enemy of the state, as far as I'm concerned.
And one last thing before I go about the people need to understand that who really cares about election time, and who really cares about re-election when your planet is getting poisoned, and you need to find a way to stop this this blowout that's happening under the sea. Forget oil spill. We always get caught into saying the word oil spill. This oil volcano, as Bob says it.
Yeah, volcano, man. That's it. Volcano. Because that's what it is. And, you know, and now BP's getting to be able to get, what, 6 or 10% of the oil, you know, somewhere around or a little over the margin of error for the estimations, and they're going, this is success. Yeah, for them, because they get to sell that oil. Because everything they've done, it was never about actually plugging the thing. It was about trying to recoup as much of their lost product as possible. There's never been a give a damn about the people.
One last thing. If we don't have the corporate death penalty, people, then this is hopeless, and there's no point to even be berating BP at this time.
Right. Right. I agree.
We just have to, and if that's the case, then you have the last option, which is we'll have to help the people ourselves at the coast, and we have to organize and form volunteer parties from coast to coast and get seriously in the trenches. If the federal government is going to keep kicking dirt and say, I don't know about this. Time's running out, guys.
Yeah.
You better get some people in there.
But I do think overriding all of this is our short-sightedness.
Yeah.
This comes down to our own hubris and not thinking that our good intentions, thought by some people, could cause such a catastrophe. And I don't think there is enough manpower, private or public, out there to actually ever fix this. It's too big.
Mm-hmm.
It's way too big. And this is where the reality always has been. This is what could happen. And it's not just could. It's kind of like people who insist on driving after a drink or two. It's not if you're going to get busted, it's when. And this was always going to happen.
I'm in complete agreement with you. And one thing regarding that is I'm just waiting for any of the Atlantis rig whistleblowers to come out and tell us what their safety violations are. If anyone's listening and you're listening on the Atlantis rig, please do that now.
Yeah. Call up, email us. Love to know. Because, I mean, just looking at that track record, you know, the 170 or 80 or whatever to like 12 or 20 against the whole rest of the industry when it came to violations, it's just amazing. But, hey, David, I got people waiting on hold, man. This has been fantastic. Great to talk to you, man. We'll hopefully be able to get back to our geeky muso conversations on my show sometime soon.
No problem, John. I'll check back tomorrow and come with something else.
All right, brother. Thanks so much, David. You have a great day.
All right, later.
All right, and moving on. I do believe we have the one, the only Sandra on the line. Hey, Sandra. Sandra? Oh, did we lose her? Bugger. We lost her? Yeah, bugger. Okay, hopefully she'll come back. All right, well, with that being the case, I'm going to take a break. I need to wetteth my whistle so you can all load up the phone lines. What would be a good thing to play here? Oh, let's see. As John goes looking for something to play. Oh. Oh, yeah, we can go there. I don't know why, but this just sounds like it might be fun. A little bit of Alice Cooper. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid here on the Head On Radio Network. This is John Fox filling in. Going to take a little break. We'll be back. A bit of Alice Cooper here on the horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Everybody, welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, all caught in the mosh. Yeah, that's what I want to say to that guy from BP. Shut up, shut up. I don't want to hear your mouth! Okay. Straight back to the phones. I do believe we have Gary on the line. Hey, Gary, welcome to the program.
Gary. I'm speaking with you.
Hey, man. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Maryland, not too far from the White House.
All right. My sister was stationed at Fort Meade many, many, many years back. I know the place.
Okay, yeah, great, great. Excellent. I was sitting here. I've been actually, haven't called in for a while. Just been listening off and on. Because I normally used to call in the past, but I just decided lately just kind of listen to other people. And after I was, listening to David, I just felt like, okay, now I just have to kind of call in.
Okay.
Put my opinion on all of this.
Absolutely.
I've been very much a very strong supporter of Obama, a lot of his positions. I even saw, both sides of things, because I have a lot of family members, obviously, being in Maryland, who are in the Army, worked in the Armed Forces. Both in low level and high level positions. So I understand that even Afghan or the, Iraq situation from both perspectives.
Yeah.
I'm against the wars, but I understand the other side. So I've been somewhat supportive of Obama even on those policies. But this Gulf thing really got to me the last couple of weeks to where he was just losing me. And if he starts to lose me, he has serious problems.
Well, I think that's what David was alluding to in his very frustrated manner is that, I think people expected to see something slightly different from this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, it's a combination of two things. I mean, the last week, I've kind of gotten a little unraged and started to really sit back and look at it more of an analytical point of view. and probably the way he's actually looking at the president is looking at it, because that's how he looks at things. I've kind of noticed that about him.
Oh, yeah.
I think we all noticed that about him. In my personal opinion, after looking at this, at first I thought they were just kind of sleeping at the wheel. But I've come to the conclusion that they knew how big of a problem this was right really from the beginning. I mean, I pretty much knew it. I think a lot of people on a lot of these talk shows that you hear kind of knew it. So there's no reason for us not to suspect that they did know it. And I just think there's been this PR campaign, or this kind of PR campaign, to say, sit back and let the thing play out the way it plays out, and then respond appropriately as they see fit, because it's such a magnitude, disaster, such a magnitude of a possible magnitude, that some of the things that they could initially done in terms of photo optics and all this other kind of stuff really wouldn't have made a difference. I don't know if that's the best way to do things in terms of from a leadership point of view. Probably not. But I do understand the other side of the component of the fact that you have a company that's unregulated, that has all the expertise in this type of scenario to bring the actual problem slash solution, you know, to this full remedy or whatever you want to call it. And I think that's pretty much the position they've had. I'm not saying that's the right position, but I think we all got to remember a couple things. Number one, that as much as this BP thing is, we can sit back. I mean, I have a simple life, maybe like most people, you know, you have a job or whatever. But, and I'm not apologizing for Obama, but we got to get realistic here. Right even before this thing going on, you had to flare up in Korea. You have, obviously, Israel probably. There's a lot of foreign stuff. You know, you got Afghanistan. We don't know all the things that they're looking at. And I don't know if this could be the best uses of his time to be down in the Gulf Coast talking with fishermen, saying, let me feel your pain, when the solution is really they just got to figure out how to fill that hole.
Well,
that's really like where my position is on it right now.
I
just think they got to do a better job from a PR standpoint to let the American people know that they're on it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he should actually be down there, you know, 24/7. I don't. There's too much going on in the world right now.
I agree with you that there. I think some of the criticism is misguided or unfounded. Then there are other criticisms that I think are spot on. Like I said earlier, from what I can tell, the response kind of services and hardware that the government had at their disposal in this era of, you know, no oversight or no preparing for the worst, which BP hasn't done, and neither had the U.S. government, because the U.S. government has gone down this thing of like, oh, they'll just regulate themselves, and we'll charge them for the cleanup, but they haven't bothered working on any of the technology to deal with the cleanup, not to mention all the cutting corners. So, I'm kind of with you, where I don't want to go and hatchet Obama over this just incessantly, because I think that that's not fair. All I say is, think about what it would be like at day whatever 50 that we're getting to if it had been the Bush-Cheney administration. And, you know, kind of in a situation of degrees, I'd rather be where we are. But I think he hasn't done a great job of getting the message out that they were out there within hours. But we're dealing with a situation where I don't think anyone, the government, BP, everybody together, has anything at their disposal to do anything about this, except we have to wait for the relief wells to hit, and we work towards equalizing the pressure to stop the flow. That's the physics of it. That's the reality.
No, there's no guarantee those relief wells won't even work.
Well, there's no guarantee that they'll hit first time, but it is pretty much been the standard that when something like this happens, and I mean it's simple physics, they go down, they tap in,
yeah,
and start pulling off until they equalize the pressure so it's not flowing out the open hole, and then they can cap it. It's really simple physics. The physics that I studied for doing audio and for being an audio engineer, it's the same stuff. It's all the same motion physics, right? So it's
Yeah, but see, the problem with all of that is you always get these, you know, it's a simple thing to do, but as someone, you know, number of sites and on the engineering side said, you're still dealing with thousands and thousands of feet that you haven't operated at before.
Yeah.
There's always something that comes up, like you weren't prepared for the, you know, the ice crystals. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I agree with you. Yeah, they can locate it. I mean, they got the, yeah, they can do all kind of, you know, whatever they need to do to locate it. They know where the hole is.
Yeah.
I mean, they know which direction is going. I mean, they can find the hole.
Yeah.
But again, there's always that something that comes up that they're just not prepared for.
Right. You know? So at 3 months, we'll get the first tap hit. And they're doing two at once, from what I understand. And, you know, fingers crossed, the people doing that work will have the luck of, you know, getting a bullseye, which they could, and, you know, start to stem the flow of this. Now, this brings a simple question to mind, Gary. Canada, the UK themselves, funny, the home of BP, Venezuela, and other countries, when drilling at these depths, or any depths offshore, the regulations in other countries stipulate that you must drill one or two relief wells at the same time you're tapping your main well, so that you're already tapped to deal with a problem. And that...
Yeah, I know Canada definitely does that. I don't know if, you know, I'm not familiar with the other one, you know, as you say.
Well,
but, that's just logic. That's common sense.
Yeah, that's common sense. You know, where people would say to me at some time, going, you know, you fucking hippies don't want us to do anything. And it's like, actually, no, I want you to do them safely and responsibly. And this is a perfect example.
Well, if I walk out my house and I know that, or look in the sky and I say, well, it might be kind of rainy, I might take a coat with me, you know? I might take an umbrella just for some security. I mean, I wouldn't just walk out the house and go miles and miles away from my house without an umbrella. I got to walk back, you know, 5 and 6 miles and get wet, you know?
Yeah, don't big ships have, like, huge pumps to pump out water and lifeboats and things like that? You know, every time they go out, they're not planning on having a disaster. But it is something that can happen, so they have to make sure that they have the equipment to deal with a real problem. And that means having enough seats in lifeboats to get the entire population of the ship off. Everything. But here, in this world of non-regulation and laissez-faire capitalism, it's like, no. The chances of her happening are like so remote it couldn't possibly happen. So, look, we don't need to spend any money on worrying about a cleanup. Don't worry about it, because they know that it'll end up being the people eventually that will clean it up, whether it's paid through by taxes or their actual work on the ground. And, you know, it's like I said, you know, thanks for the flesh.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, I just think a lot of this, when it comes down to it, does question Obama's leadership, because, again, you know, like these type of things, any type of leader, you always, you know, get out in front of things, communicate clearly what the problem is, who the responsible party is, and what you're going to do to rectify the situation. Now, again, I know he's juggling a lot of things. And, you know, that being said, I still say that, you know, my opinion, he should have been, you know, pretty much out there, you know, from day one, you know, I hate to use that phrase, but from day one, and saying, hey, this is a situation, yeah, and this and that, and he just didn't do it for whatever reason. I don't know. I personally have this thing, because I have some friends in Louisiana, and I, you know, and I don't want to bring this into it, but I think Obama has just a little bit of indifference to that whole region, personally. I don't know, maybe because, you know, look, let's be honest, Louisiana, you know, Mississippi, Alabama, those are just aren't the places where people are going to vote for Obama, you know. So,
but,
you know,
but,
at some point I start thinking, well, maybe it's a little bit of politics involved there. I mean, come on, he doesn't even want to deal with Bobby Jindal at all. Here's a guy who said, no, we want states' rights. I don't even want to deal with the federal government. Now he's begging the federal government to come in.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like you get what you deserve.
Yeah, and Jindal was also one of those.
I hate to say it like that, because I don't think the people deserve that. But what I'm saying is that, in terms of if I was a micromanager to one person, Mr. Bobby Jindal, you know, and let's be honest, there's a lot of people down there in Louisiana and a lot of Florida and all these other places, you know, and in Washington who, and look, let's look at the coal mine industry. I mean, people, there are thousands and thousands of jobs. Yes, that's nice and well and fine. Everybody goes, oh, we got jobs and this and that. But then when something goes wrong, it's like everybody wants to complain and scream and holler.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we need to get off these, you know, get off these dangerous, you know, energy sources. I mean, that's the reality of the situation, you know?
Sometimes it's so simple it can drive you crazy. You know, and the facts are all there saying that this is just a huge flag saying this, we should have stopped doing this decades ago. Hello, the ocean was already dying. We may now have actually killed it, especially down in that part of the planet. And like David said, you know, I agree. I'm tired of it, even here in the Australian press, being portrayed as the United States' worst ever oil disaster. It is the planet's worst ever oil disaster. And that's
even if we don't have evidence, we got to think, you have to think that way. You know what I mean?
Just,
you know, you got to come out the box saying, you know what, this possibility, you know, that's how I was thinking right from the beginning. This could be the thing, you know, that destroys, you know, a third of the hemisphere. I mean, that was how I was thinking on day one.
Yep.
You know, oh, there I go using it again. But that's how you got to look at these things, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
anyway. I'm tired. But, I'm tired of the blind, just kind of willful stupidity. Because that's all I can think of it being. When all the facts are so clearly in front of you that you can actually still support things that are killing you, killing your children, and killed 11 platform workers. There's something seriously wrong.
Well, I think
wrong.
The other thing, too, is adding into that is that, you know, as much as I would like Obama to come out and say, we're going to do, you know, have his Jimmy Carter moment or whatever you want to call it, and say, we're moving everything, and he really makes an aggressive move to do these things, I personally honestly believe he wouldn't be successful. I mean, I honestly, you know, a lot of people get mad with me, you know, I know people on the left because he's a lot more pragmatic. I just don't think we're so tied into the greed and the corporate culture ourselves because let's be honest, a lot of Americans idolize, you know, the corporations and, you know, the Glenn Blacks and Rush Limbaughs or whatever. And so that they get seduced into that certain way of thinking.
Yeah.
That I don't think there's enough willpower for a president, you know, maybe a dictator, but not a president to move us in the direction that we need to go. It's almost like we need these disasters, like the financial catastrophe to happen, you know, or this oil spill to make people say, oh, we need to move in a certain direction. And I even if this thing gets solved tomorrow, in terms of they cap this thing, there's no doubt in my mind we still would not move where we need to go. You know, there's no doubt in my mind. Somebody will be somewhere saying we still got to deregulate, let the oil companies, you know, explore because we got to, you know, cut down our use of oil on, you know, from foreign, you know, sources
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
Rather than saying we just need to get off oil.
Yeah. we get off oil and the money that we're pissing up the wall in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places would also disappear. All that need, a lot of that would go away as well. So, like, why are we funding the people who supposedly hate us? I do not understand. It doesn't, no logic makes it work in my brain. I don't think any logic makes it work in your brain, Gary. And I hope that on that one you're wrong, that we are able to actually make some sort of move. But yeah, I don't see Obama going, that's right, you know, 10-year plan, we're off oil. That would never happen. That would never work. Not in corporate America. It just couldn't happen. But Gary, I got other people waiting on the line. Absolutely
yep.
fantastic to talk to you. Thanks for ringing in, my friend.
Okay.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye.
All right, and I think we're going to move on to Sandra got back on the line. You there, Sandra?
John.
Hey, Sandra. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing good. It feels really good to be doing this again. It's been a long time.
Yeah, no. You've been doing other things, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, get bloody music industry kind of sucked me up again, but hey, you know, that's what I do.
Yeah, no, that's all good.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, you know, I kind of wanted to ask you what you thought of this the Helen Thomas business, if I may drift away from the.
You may. I've been kind of wanting to hit on this, and I swear this is like I can already feel my foot kind of starting to get the early shocks of the third rail. Here's the problem. Helen Thomas, legend, lover, has probably more factual basis on history and a grasp of things unlike many in this world. And she has been there through the entire history, pretty much, you know, that we've been going through the Israeli-Gaza conflict. And she actually said something very, very clear, and I've said it before and gotten in a lot of trouble. Why is it that after World War II, we handled the displaced peoples of Germany and Poland and whatnot differently than in any other conflict? No other conflict did we go and cut off a piece of someone else's land and move them there. In every other conflict in history and since, the nations of the world increase their intake of refugees and they go to other places. But in this one place, we have cut a piece of somebody else's land out, said this is no longer yours, and then those people have continued to isolate you and have continued to make your people poor, starving, sick. And as far as I'm concerned, and I said it before, this whole experiment was a bad idea to begin with. No matter where you put the nation of Israel, it was going to be a problem because it was going to be just snip, snip, this is yours. There's always going to be a displaced people. And then Israel have not handled themselves well at all. And I think that they're believing their own nonsense.
No, and it's just the thing that struck me about the Helen Thomas thing is that, oh, wait a minute. The White House can come out and talk about how reprehensible and horrible her comments were, but yet they can't comment on 9 people being shot to death?
Yeah, and an American being shot to death, 4 in the head, 1 in the chest, and even here they're reporting him as a Turkish American. And it's like...
But no, it's just, no, so, you know, the absurdity of it, the theater of absurd in condemning this woman who's speaking more truth in that statement. They are able to jump out front and talk about that.
Yeah.
But they stopped the UN Security Council from pointing out who did what. I mean, I was just sort of appalled and horrified by just that realization.
Yeah.
It just really is disturbing. And they also just want to get rid of her because they don't like her.
She's
up in that room asking a question. Not playing water sports with them motherfuckers. I'm sorry.
You're right.
I'm like, are you kidding me with this?
Well, that's how I feel. And I'm trying to think who it is. I think what's his name? Chris Floyd had a piece at Empire Burlesque. Or ChrisFloyd.com, his blog, where, you know, and I was thinking the same thing, where I think Israel believes its own bullshit, like I said, for one. And you see, you know, these representations, you know, you're going to believe your lying eyes kind of thing. And you're right, you know, the White House can come out and condemn, you know, this or that, but then they condemn Helen Thomas for making...
An 89-year-old woman.
Yeah, and then her booking agent, what a bunch of pussies they are, dumped her straight away.
Well, I'm not surprised, but it's also a whole history there, you know, because Helen Thomas has been one of the few people in the last 15 years who've been able to hand these people their asses. She's not, you know, cavorting with them, you know. I mean, it is so disgusting when you look at the press in this country and their whole sycophant behavior. It's just like, I don't know. And so when this all happened, I just thought, oh, here we go. She's out. You know, I knew she was out. You know, I knew it. That was just it. It was like, oh, goody, goody, we can get rid of her now.
Yeah. And
after her long, amazing history, I'm like, are you kidding me? Another victim of the sort of Israeli paranoid, media-controlled,
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Get another one.
And
it just, I don't know, depressing.
I don't think that, you know, there I heard some discussion about this on telly this morning, and some people were talking about how, you know, this is going to be a horrible end to such an illustrious career. And I think, you know, give it a little time, and Helen Thomas will be remembered for being the wonder of journalism that she was. I don't think that this is
I'm hoping she finds a venue where she can say what she really thinks, and I'm sure it'll be a whole lot, and I I can't wait to hear it. Because,
yeah,
she bowed out on this one, but I don't, you know, I'm looking more at the Beltway and how disgusting they are. I mean, she and her career will be remembered, like you said. It's fine, but it's more sort of where we're at and how people get so exercised about these ideas and these incidents, yet people are being murdered wholesale. The Gaza thing is like escape from New York, open-air prison by the sea. And it's just, you know, where is the outrage on that? You know, where is the balanced reporting on that?
Well, I mean, Israel has been on a propaganda campaign like no other to try and paint this thing. Actually,
it's amazing.
Since we're on this, I have to play something. And I'd like you to hang out for this. Now, let me just find the bloody clip. Now, I don't know if you've heard about this thing, but let's see if we can find it here. Just bear with me a sec. A video has been going around to paint the relief workers on the boat, on the first boat, as terrorists. And here from The Guardian says, the Israeli government has been forced to apologize for circulating a spoof video mocking activists aboard the Gaza flotilla. And it's set to the song We Are the World. You ready to vomit, Sandra?
Oh, good God. Yeah, let's hear it.
It's called We Calm the World.
There comes a time when we need to make a show for the world, the web and CNN. There's no people dying, so the best that we can do is create the greatest bluff of all. We must go on pretending day by day that in Gaza there's crisis, hunger and plague.
'Cause the billion vaccinated won't buy their basic needs, like some cheese and missiles for the king.
Did you get that? They can't get enough with their billions in aid. Maybe they can get some cheese and missiles for the kids.
You know, it's just sort of it is so disgusting. I mean, is Israel, do they actually think that sort of belittling the weak is, you know, the way to go? I mean, their whole thing seems to be, no matter what horror they inflict on people, they're the victim. That narrative seems to be sort of permanent, at least in our media. And for the life of me, I'm like, well, how? They're the fourth largest military in the world, John.
Yeah.
The world.
And the nukes that we're not supposed to talk about, and, you know, the constant flaunting of international law, you know. And
the whole, like, yeah. And I'm just sort of looking at Biden talking about, oh, what's the big deal? It's like, oh, you know, Obama sort of stuck, you know, Hillary talking about, well, we need to get all the facts. If it was an Iranian ship, would they need to get all the facts?
Well, and you know, it, just the fact that it was in international waters, the first one.
Well,
that.
Yeah, what happened to international law? That just sort of went out the window, right?
Well, and see, this is another thing that you know, the United States kind of lacks the moral authority anymore after George W. Bush and his preemptive war routine. It's just given people like Israel and, say, you know, Kim Jong-il and other, you know, seriously violent people out there, they've got precedent.
And those poor three
No, go ahead.
Oh, and I'm thinking those three kids in Iran, I mean, you know, they're being held. It's like, hello.
And you know.
Just sort of flaunting of international law.
Yeah, and you know when the first boat I haven't actually been able to follow up. I haven't followed closely about the one that they've now escorted kind of in broad daylight, you know, because they got done with the nighttime one, and most of the Irish one. Yeah. Most of the world is pretty bloody pissed off about the whole situation, and I think even Israel's best allies, you know, palm to forehead, going like, "What are you people doing?" And 2 days after the initial flotilla incident last week, here on ABC television here, they had a German MP on by telephone who was on the boat, talked about the fact that, you know, it was basically the people on the boat who grabbed anything they could to fend off people invading their ship. And when they were all taken, all of their phones, mobiles, cameras, everything was confiscated because they all had footage that would defend them. And the Israelis will not let any of that ever see the light of day. Every bit of footage from any of the people on that boat was confiscated. So that needs to be talked about more. The fact that this has been straight propaganda.
One thing that's even funnier, though, is that, you know, there's a level of incompetence at play here, because it's like, before the flotilla incident, what's Gaza? Where? Now, Gaza all the time. You see what I'm saying? So it's like, I understand that, you know, I'm just trying to figure out what's the end game here. To me, I think, unfortunately, at the expense of those poor 9 people who died, it's raised the profile of the prison by the sea that they've created. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, I think that this event does no good for Israel. I think that this will eventually completely backfire on them. You know,
yeah.
To have someone like Nutjob come out and say, and Lieberman, who a guy who I cannot stand, you know, not Lieberman, not ours, the Israeli guy. You know,
the Nazi.
Yeah, there is no humanitarian crisis.
Yeah, no, that guy is the one who wants loyalty oaths. I mean, he's a straight up, that is apartheid right there. My goodness.
I agree. I, and you know, the Israelis and the South Africans used to kind of train together.
Well, Israel was planning to sell them all sorts of nukes or nuke making equipment back in the day. So, I mean, the connection is really quite ugly. And, I mean, I've never been to the Middle East, but, you know, an associate of mine spent a semester there. And, you know, the horror stories he told me, I was just like, So, I mean, the place isn't nice. And what Israel is doing is quite, you know, horrific. I don't know. I just was sort of, the Helen Thomas thing was just, it's like almost a bad play. Because, you know, they were so quick to get rid of her. That was like, what, within 24 hours, wasn't it?
Yeah. And you know, there were definitely people, you know, that have hated Helen Thomas because she's good at what she does for so long that I bet there are people paid to just keep an eye on everything she says, just looking for that thing. And she went and stepped on the third rail of politics. And I'm like you. I'm really hoping, you know, let the dust settle a little bit, and then she'll start doing actual full-on op-ed columns, you know.
Yeah, you know.
And without having to protect her seat in the press room or any of that, I think she'll probably go off. And I hope she does.
Yeah, I know. I'm hoping so, because I'm sure she has, you know, loads to say. Anyway, I guess that's really it. I just thought I'd check in. How is it down under?
It's good. You know, we're kind of going into winter. We've just been getting, like, rained on for about three straight weeks, and the sun's actually out, so my chickens are remembering what daylight is, and I'm remembering what the sun looks like, and it's kind of nice. But, yeah, it's always good down here.
Do you live in Sydney, or?
I live about an hour or so north of Sydney, a little town called Woi Woi, which is Aboriginal for much water, because we're on a peninsula surrounded on three sides by water, and it's in an area called the Central Coast of New South Wales, and it's a brilliant place.
I lived in Australia in the 80s, actually.
Oh, whereabouts?
For about a year and a half.
Where?
And, it was a wonderful place, and I have to say I was there illegally, but it was all quite fun, and, I miss Australia. Although, when I was there, I was sort of appalled. I couldn't believe what was going on with the Aboriginals. I thought, wow.
The guys that went and ruined it for the Native Americans are the same guys that came here later and just were more efficient at the destruction.
There's not too many Aboriginals left.
Nope. And the situation going on in the Northern Territory is appalling. I didn't even do an Invasion Day show this year. I think I was off, because usually Australia Day, most years I've done, I call Australia Day Invasion Day. And,
oh, okay.
And so on Australia Day, you know, you go through the shops, like, Happy Invasion Day, and I watch to see the different reactions of people. And, you know, you say it to an islander or an aboriginal, you get this big grin, you know, and then the white people, it's a mix. And you can tell what side, you can tell exactly where they fall. It's like when I was living in South Sydney, flat that a mate of mine and I had was right next to a local elementary school, and a couple of teachers were out with a whole bunch of the students, obviously getting ready to do some sort of Aboriginal celebration of sorts, and they're hanging all these ribbons and Aboriginal flags around, and I come walking out and I go, ah, the real Australian flag. And you just see, like, all these little kids and this teacher, most of them Aboriginal, turn at me like, you know, wow, that was really cool to hear from an American, you know, and, like, big smiles, like, you know, yeah, I get it. 50,000 years those people were here, and you've managed to get them cut down to a few thousand.
Oh, no. Blown away by it. But beyond that, you know, I thought Australia was wonderful.
Yeah, it's a good place. Thanks so much, Sandra. It's really great to talk to you.
Have a good rest of the show.
I will, and I'll be here for the next couple of days. You take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. And that was Sandra. And I'm going to go and take a quick little break and check and see if we got anybody else waiting on hold, which would be fun. Let's see. What should we play? Let's see. No. Oh. We'll go with this. Bit of Alice in Chains from the first album, Sea of Sorrow. You're listening to John Fox filling in for Bob Kincaid here on America's Liberal Voice, The Horn. Stick around. We'll be back. Light up them phone lines, please. They're all open. It's all yours. Hit it, Lane.
Yeah. Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty, everybody. Welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox filling in. We got like another 30 minutes or so. I'll probably go maybe about 10 minutes over to fill in the time. Hopefully Mr. Malloy won't be upset with moi, but we did get off to a little bit of a late start. A couple things I got to touch on that I haven't gotten to quite yet, and we got a little bit of time if you want to get in on the phones. 1-877, you know, Head On, that whole bit. But Gail, my partner, posted a little bit off of a Counterpunch piece on her Facebook page, and I think that this kind of says it. A friend of mine gave me a good parody of the servile posture of the U.S. government and press. I think, he wrote to me, that matters are close to the point where if Hillary Clinton and the group of senior American officials were meeting the Israeli leaders for negotiations and Netanyahu expressed his displeasure at the American positions by pulling out a gun and shooting her dead, than having the entire American delegation beaten to death by security guards, there would probably be a small item buried in the next day's American newspapers that due to a conflict with the Israelis, Obama decided to nominate a new Secretary of State. And I think it's spot on. And that piece at Counterpunch should be linked on today's blog post at headon.headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to Trouble for posting stuff today, and just a few other things. First of all, our wondrous teenager Cassie, who has just graduated high school and is on her way to Princeton. How cool is that? And I just couldn't kind of be happier about that. And I swear I'd go through 4 years of university if I could just sit through a couple lectures from Cornell West. I'd just be a very, 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 very happy man. But anyway, Cassie has created her blog. You know, she had political teen tidbits where she's done such great writing over the last few years. And since she's graduated from high school, she's graduated her blog. So it's now Cassie at College. And I believe that's a .wordpress.com. And look very forward to seeing what we read from the wonder that is Cassie over the coming years as she takes on Princeton. Just very, very, very exciting stuff, to be sure, to be sure. And I was kind of hoping that I might actually get a call from Bob during this to get a little bit of an update of what they've been up to in D.C., but we'll probably get one of those tomorrow night. We'll try and get that all kind of worked out. Like I said, it's all happening while I'm asleep, and I don't know if a lot of you are at work and are able to catch the programming. And it will go into, I believe we will be having archives of all that running overnight after this show is complete. Agnes reports to me that Bob is MIA at the moment. Probably means that the day's done. He's off having dinner and a beer, which he should. And on that note, folks, the support has been coming in nicely the first week of the month. The horn is on the road this month. All this stuff costs money. I hate to always have to do this, but we have to do this. Backtracking a bit, Cassie's actually got this blog out of her own thing, CassieAtCollege.com. Right on. Thanks for that, Betsy. Agnes, beer. I tell you, that what's been going on in the world lately between the Gulf disaster and, you know, the aid ships being attacked and North and South Korea getting all blustery with each other and all kinds of other crazy, crazy, crazy shit that's going on. It could really, really drive someone to drink. And one thing I'm going to point, this is kind of frivolous, this is more than frivolous, but Do yourself a favor. At the Times Online, timesonline.co.uk, and you can even find a link to this on my Facebook if you if you're in my friends loop. If not, find me, John Fox. And Ozzy Osbourne is now writing a health column. That's right. Ozzy Osbourne is writing a health column for the Times Online. And I'll tell you, I wish more people in this world were as brutally honest with themselves and the rest of the world and about themselves as Ozzy is. Go and have a read of this thing. It's hysterical because he talks about how he's the biggest hypochondriac in the world. And did you know that Ozzy is like almost a vegetarian now? And, you know, at 61 years of age, you know. And this is a guy that looks back at the abuse that he put himself through and, you know, says, don't do what I did. He talks about how his friends call him for parenting advice. I know that sounds insane, but when you read this piece, you'll have a great laugh. And sorry, Ozzy's a legend as far as I'm concerned. Great lyricist, you know. And has always been a hippie of the highest degree, and most people don't even realize that. And you know what? I just kind of had a thought. We're going to do a little bit, kind of what we do on my show, which we do a lot of music in the environment on my show. And I should have this, yes. Since there's no one waiting on the phone at the moment, I think that this song is unbelievably poignant. And since we're just talking about Ozzy, here's one of my favorite examples of what a great lyricist this guy is. And I think this is one of the greatest environmental songs ever written. Off the very first record, Blizzard of Oz, Ozzy Osbourne and Revelation, Mother Earth. Check this lyric if you've never heard this before. It's beautiful.
Mother, please.
person there. It's an abrupt ending. You know, it's like back in the days of vinyl where one song could actually segue into the next. Anyway, Revelation Mother Earth. Still one of the most moving lyrics I know. Just spot on. For they know not what they do. Just. So, okay, where have we been? We've been a whole lot of places today. You know, this whole oil thing is going to be the subject for us for months, if not years to come. You know, this is not one we're going to be able to make go away. It's not happening. And as David said earlier, you know, I think he's onto something. Obama and the administration must get out and start doing town halls or something like it. Go out and show by your presence. I mean, this is one of the things, you know, there's been discussions on how, like, you know, in the UK, you've got a head of, you know, you've got royalty and you've got the government. So, like, you have the Queen and you have the Prime Minister. The Queen can be the moral compass, or the moral mirror or the outrage mirror for the people, while the Prime Minister goes and does the business of state. But in the American system, the American system, that just kind of pulled me up. The American system as it stands now, who does the American system work for? Gotta ask the question. But, you know, Obama's got to get out there and keep this thing front and center. Has to keep the outrage level up, because, and he has to play both the Queen and the Prime Minister at once. So he has all the responsibility of trying to make something happen, and while going out there and being the mirror of the American people back to BP, Halliburton, Transocean. Yeah, David, I'm going to start doing that. All three in the same sentence every single time. BP, Transocean, Halliburton. BP, Transocean, Halliburton. BP, Transocean, Halliburton, Halliburton, Halliburton. Dick Cheney's former company. What single politician in United States history has done more actual physical touchable damage to the nation than Dick Cheney, former vice president? Yeah. This is all kind of small time compared to all the soldiers you were electrocuting in Iraq. It's freaky, freaky, freaky shit going on, people. Yeah, George W. Bush did a lot of damage, too. But, you know, he was the front's dirty, dead-eyed dick. Went about the business of dismantling the things that protect the people. Unbelievable. But we're here now. We now actually have a worst case scenario happening. It's not a possibility to be denied or minimized or talked through to be thought to be non-existent. Those that have been screaming about these practices for decades were right then, they're right now. And anyone who says, oh, you stop all the offshore drilling, we're going to have oil supply problems. Well, it's only like 6% of the supply. okay? Add an extra, you know, 20 cents to your gallon of gas. Tough! So I have no sympathy when people go, oh, it's going to hurt people. No, you're killing people. You're putting soldiers in harm's way because we have to try and defend our right to the crack pile. Said it's an addiction. It's an addiction. Oil is like heroin, and coal is like crack. And, you know, even make threats of making it a little bit harder to get or a little bit more expensive, and the addicts go, no, I'll die. I can't handle the withdrawal. You must push off my short-term pain for long-term destruction, just as long as I'm not impacted right here, right now. But so much of this comes down to apathy, for one. I mean, I think apathy is the disease of this planet. It's people just not giving a rat's ass about anything but their own fucking selves. And for those of you that normally listen to Bob Kincaid, if the language is bothering you a little bit, I really don't make any apologies as far as I'm concerned. It's all just words. And you know what? Sometimes the hard words are the ones that are necessary to convey how one feels. And I have to say, it's one of the things that I have really enjoyed about living outside the American bubble is simple things like maturity about language, right? You know, I mean, you say titty caca in America and you're still going to get a whole bunch of old people going, tee-hee-hee. Come on. And I think that maturity feeds into other things, you know? One thing, you know, even though, like, our prime minister down here is having some problems at the moment, but no one's turning around saying, hey, we want to go back to that Howard era and go back to where we're supporting, you know, Iraqi wars and this, that, and the other thing. Might be having trouble right now, but there are things that it did right that changed the direction for people. And I don't think, even though attention spans are just as short here sometimes, people haven't forgotten. And really, sometimes, you know, people who ring into this program and email, and I've gotten tons of emails today, most of them just, you know, glad to hear you back on air, and I do appreciate it. It's been great all day long. But, you know, there are probably other people who are expats that probably feel the same way. Sit there and look from a distance, and I see, as a population, or as the population that seems to be able to direct public policy and the image of America, and that it's becoming an increasingly ignorant, insular, and childish. You know, that whole land of the free, home of the brave thing, as far as I'm concerned, the last 10 years, bunch of bullshit. The land of the scared. And constantly people are manipulated into doing things against their own best interest through fear. And one of these days, that fear is going to run out, I hope. And we'll start getting some real direction going. Some real changes. But right now, I'm watching. The outrage just isn't there with this Gulf thing. It's just not there yet. I know with individual people it is. And with some of the coverage, like I said, Rachel Maddow has done a beautiful job down there. And some really difficult television to watch. But that's what the news is supposed to be. The news is actually supposed to tell you what's going on. Not make you feel good. Not cater itself to feed red meat that makes you feel good in your own delusions. And that's what, like, Fox News is. It's all just pumping shit. It's all just pumping shit more and more and more and more. Does anyone remember? Does anyone remember? Okay, see, I grew up in New Jersey, right? And I grew up listening to Howard Stern when he was still on AM radio, even. And do we remember that after the Stones had declared themselves, you know, the greatest rock band in the world, and after Michael Jackson had declared himself through press release as the king of pop, Howard Stern said, "I am now the king of all media. All people will refer to me as the king of all media, because I'm going to prove if you tell a lie often enough, it will become the truth." And within weeks, pieces written about Howard Stern would say, "Howard Stern, king of all media." And there you go. That's how simple it is. It's how simple it is to dupe people. If you sit them in front of a box and just feed them all those flashing lights and going, "You don't want to stop the drilling. No, this is not the leak you're looking for." So with that, we're going to close it out. I'm going to close it out on time because people are going to be sliding over to Malloy since he's back. So with that, I would like to thank, well, Agnes, first of all, for screening my phone calls today. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much. It's been a real flashback. It's been good fun to do this again.